Accession number 23216, real one.
Colonel Corbould, real one. Can you tell me if there was a tradition of military service in your family background?
Yes, my father was in the Coldstream Guards in the First War, as a result of which he was very badly gassed, and he died a month before I was born, in 1922. So I never knew my father at all. My eldest brother, Paul, was in the Coldstream, wartime, and my brother, Peter, also. And I was always getting in the Coldstream right from the cradle.
Can you remember when it was you first became aware of the fact that you were destined for the Coldstream Guard?
Oh, yes. Very early in my life. I think I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I was always being marched to London to see guard mounting and so on. And when I was 11, I made my first entry into Wellington Barracks to watch guard mounting one morning with my mama. And our 3rd Battalion was mounting guard. And it was a great occasion. I used to attend the King's, it was then, birthday parade before the war. I was given time off from school to do so. And I always loved it. And I was interviewed for the regiment at Westminster, where I was at school, in the armory one day after OTC parade. He became General Whittaker. He was then Colonel Whittaker, who was then commanding the Coldstream.
I'm going to ask you whether you did any military training while you were at school.
Oh, so I was in the OTC.
Can you remember what was on the syllabus of training at the OTC at Westminster?
Well, of course, the army in those days was very different to what it is now. I mean, there was very little technical stuff. It was mainly field training, and we had to know our weaponry very well indeed. And we also had an ex-Coldstream Guards Sergeant Major of the Corps, and who was also a member of the Queen's Bodyguard, the owner of the Guard. So he was very keen on drill. So we could shoot, we could march, we could drill. And also we had to take, of course, the Cert A, which I passed.
Can you remember doing any tactical training? And if so, at what level?
Purely at section and platoon level, mainly in Richmond Park.
Amongst the deer?
Amongst the deer.
Can you remember anything about the style of tactics that you were taught in the OTC?
Well, whether it was, as we would call it now, two up and bags of smoke, I don't quite know, because there was no battle drill in those days. As you know, battle drill was introduced into the army by the great Field Marshal Alexander when he was commanding the 1st Division. But it hadn't filtered through to OTCs. So it was fairly simple stuff. And of course, none of our instructors, none of our masters who were the officers in the Corps, had ever served. So it was all very simple and very, very basic indeed.
Do you remember doing any defensive tactical training, digging in, for example?
Not really, no, no. We were taken to camp at Strensel in 1937. 1938 it was cancelled because of the Munich crisis. In 1939 we were taken down to Ashdown Forest for 10 days. I suppose we did dig a few trenches down there then, yes.
Do you remember what style of trenches they were? Were they continuous lines, or were they the sort of
individual
rifle
individual for rifle positions?
One man rifle pits.
Yes, and we were told to get in them. We had to obviously take out mock targets and so on. Our actual aiming was very carefully checked by the Sergeant Major.
So he got you with sectors, had he to
cover
and fields of fire.
That sort of thing. Yes, yes.
That sounds very up to date.
And also, of course, we had to do a lot of marching too.
What sort of distances were you having to march?
Oh, no more than 4 miles, something sort of like that. In those days, of course, with old-fashioned equipment, the webbing equipment.
Field service marching order?
Field service marching order, yes, yes.
And you would have the puttees?
Yes, right up to our... We wore them up to our knees. And sometimes we used to put on our pyjama trousers underneath.
What was the advantage of doing that?
Well, it was a bit rough on the knees. I suppose we were a bit sissy, I suppose.
You didn't like the serge grating.
In my platoon, in fact, there was a man called Peter Ustinov. And as I was getting to the army, he was. It was always my job to dress him for drill parades.
Was he a competent cadet, as you remember?
Hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. I got him on parade one day. The bugle signed up with a clear note in Little Dean's yard. And he walked out in front of me, and I'd forgotten to put his putties on. And our platoon sergeant was a most delightful man called Richard Wakeford, who won the Victoria Cross with the Hampshires at Casino. And he gave me extra drills because I hadn't got used to not properly dressed.
Was that the Captain Wakeford?
Yes. Richard Wakeford, yes, yes. Now I said he did.
You were growing up in the 1920s and 30s.
Yep.
Do you remember if there was a time at which you thought first that it was likely there would be another war in Europe?
Very difficult question to answer. I think it dawned upon me very much in 1938 when the Munich crisis came about, because by that time I was 16. And although I said to myself I was fairly mature at 16, I really didn't think about it before that at all, no. And the thought of war didn't worry me at all. I thought it was going to be rather exciting. I thought my father died as a result of the First War. I was going to do my stuff.
Do you think that was a generally held view at the time?
No,
sure,
I don't.
Confrères?
No, I don't, no. I was thought to be really rather eccentric. In fact, when I go back to any Westminster functions now, and my contemporaries on CB, they say, oh, well, here's the old soldier, here's Corbeau, army, barmy.
Did you have any idea about the way in which the war might be fought, for example, about the development of armoured warfare or airborne warfare?
I had no idea at all. Absolutely no idea at all. I was absolutely ignorant of that. I mean, I haven't got a very original mind, I think. Probably didn't occur to me.
What was your first official contact with the army as such?
I suppose being taken to London to watch guard mounting. I never really thought of any other regiments at all. I don't think so. I saw them. I visited Aldershot, of course, with the OTC. But it was always the Coldstream and the Brigade of Guards with which I was most familiar. On field days, we would go, and in OTC camp, we'd be with, I know one year we had the York and Lancashire Regiment, Miss Trensel, and we had Cameronians, I think it was, at Borden one day. We did a field day with them at Borden. But there's, and then I think we came back against the Welsh Regiment at one stage. But, I mean, I always had a Coldstream Star in my mind.
How did you actually join the army then?
Well, I was due to go to Sandhurst, as I say, in 1940 if the war hadn't come. And my mama received a letter from the war saying that your boy does not have to take the army entrance exam now, for which I was devoutly thankful. Indeed, I got the papers at home of what the papers were in those days. And so, of course, I had to cast around and see, well, what does one do? I couldn't get into the Coldstream as a guardsman because the brigade squad hadn't been formed then. And so David Scott Barrett, a great friend of mine who is a retired lieutenant general now, the Scots Guards, he and I went to school together, both at my prep school and at Westminster, and subsequently here at Sandhurst too. So he said, I'm going to join the Royal Berkshire Regiment as a young soldier. I'll join the Buffs, because I had a cousin who commanded a Buffs brigade in the First World War. So for, I suppose it must have been 10 months, I was in this extraordinary organisation.
How did you go about joining them? Did you just go to the...
I went to a recruiting office in Croydon.
And what happened there?
And they enlisted me as just like an ordinary soldier.
What was the procedure of enlisting as a soldier? Was there any sort of medical examination?
Oh, yes, medical examination, yes.
Was that a thorough process?
A very thorough process indeed. I hesitate to tell you this, but this is a very thorough examination indeed. And as a young boy, I was rather well endowed. And the medical officer turned to one of his friends and said, come and have a look at this boy here.
I was very proud.
Were you fit?
Very fit. Very fit. This sounds a bit prig thing to say. I never smoked in my life. I've always had a certain amount of drink in my life. I was never encouraged. As a boy, I drank beer. But I always was very fit indeed, yes, yes. And I was extraordinarily slender.
Having signed on for the Buffs, what happened next?
Well, then I was sent off down to Folkestone that very same day. And we were put into defensive positions to guard the beaches. We were issued with a Ross rifle, a Canadian Ross rifle. And we were all given 5 rounds. And eventually, because I'd been in the OTC after about a month, I was made a Lance Corporal, along with Norton Braben, who'd been in the OTC at Eton. And we had this section. So we literally were in frontline trenches on the cliffs of Dover. And the thought of the Germans arriving, we were delighted, we'd have a jolly good go. No imagination on my store.
What was there forward of your firing trenches in the way of obstacles and defences?
Nothing at all, just the open beaches.
No wire or mines?
No mines, certainly. No. There may have been wire, and I do know there were wooden anti-aircraft pieces but behind us. Wooden.
What were the other soldiers in the Young Soldiers Battalion like?
The biggest ramscallywag you ever met in your life. And I had to, because we were regarded as toffs. There was Norton Brave and Tim Lewis, who came to the Coldstream with me, and another chap called Peter Creswell, who went to, I think, the Welsh, I'm not quite sure. And we were all regarded as toffs. And, of course, they were always having the mickey taken out of us in a big way. And one day it came to be sort of a bit of a fisticuffs, and I had to deal with a man called Ginger Sutton. And having disposed of Ginger Sutton, I was in.
Where was Ginger Sutton from?
Oh, the east end of London. I'm not sure whether he'd been a Borstal boy or not, but it was quite an education to meet up with these people. We all lived in an enormous barrack room, all together.
I was going to ask you about whether they were from Kent or whether they were Londoners.
No, they were mainly Londoners. Mm. And one, a delightful lad, called Daisy Weech. And Daisy Weech offered to be, he called in those days, Batman, to Norton Braven and myself. And we treated him as such. He loved being with us.
What was his background? Do you know anything about him?
He'd been, I think, a scullery boy at the Savoy. Oh.
So he was inured to service?
Oh, yes, he was inured to service, yes. But he nearly wept when Norton, and I, and Tim left for Sandhurst.
How did you take to the discipline of being a soldier?
Oh, no problem at all. I was brought up by my mamma. I was the youngest of five, and I had, as you said, no father. My mother she was the most marvellous woman. She had an absolute will of iron. And what mamma said, you did. So I was quite used to discipline. It didn't worry me in the least bit.
And what about these rather basic living conditions in the barrack room? What were they like?
Put up with them. One got used to it. But I can attune myself, I used to be able to attune myself very easily indeed to one's surroundings. I had no problem there at all.
And what about the food? How did that compare with...
absolutely ghastly. I mean, so much so that I arrived at Sandhurst with impetigo.
Bad diet.
It was a very bad diet indeed, yes, awful. Mm. And we used to live on sort of Mars bars and biscuits and all that sort of thing.
When you were in your frontline role guarding the cliffs, was there ever any invasion alert or scare?
Oh, yes. Particularly at night, when it all came to nothing at all.
What were you supposed to do if there had been a landing?
Open fire. That's all we were told to do. But you only had five rounds, and you had something like, I don't know, must have been 200 or 300 yards of beach apiece. So it may have been absolutely, totally useless.
Were you in individual rifle pits there, or were you in
individual? Well, no, we were in sections. The three sections are platoon.
Yes. So there was no plan to withdraw then, or
no. Like we had a very nice platoon commander who didn't know A from a bull's foot about it. His name was Gugwetha, and he, I think, probably been in the TA bus and been drafted to this battalion. And he took us rather under his wing, which he ought not to have done, I suppose, but. Yeah, we were kindred spirits.
Did you think the Germans were really going to turn up one day? Was it a...
Yes, we did. On one particular occasion, we did, yes. Mm. That was a little bit on the alarming side, because I had one or two chaps who were getting a bit windy. Uh-huh. So one had to, for the first time in one's life, say, no, steady down, chaps, you do as I say, and you'll be all right.
How did they respond? Was it possible to...?
No problem at all.
Could you spot that sort of chap in advance, or was it a surprise to you when they started wobbling?
No, I didn't think it was a surprise at all. Answer your question, I did not notice it in advance, but when they started to wobble, they were under control.
Hmm. Did you have any artillery or other... support available?
None at all. I said we had a wooden anti-aircraft emplacement behind us.
Did that attract any attention from the German Air Force at all?
They came over a lot. We were on Hawkinge Aerodrome for a time on ground defence, and we got heavily bombed there. And that was perhaps a fire. We were very heavily bombed indeed, and it was Hawkins being a front-line airfield.
It was a fighter station, wasn't it?
It was, yes, mm. yes. And that was very unpleasant indeed, very unpleasant.
Did you have shelters?
Yes, we were put down into a shelter during the actual main part of the bombing raid, and then it wasn't quite certain, but it might be followed up by an attack, so we were taken out and put up onto the airfield again for ground defence.
What sort of damage had this bombing raid done?
Well, mainly the runways had been heavily bombed because they were full of holes and so on, so the chaps couldn't take off.
Do you have any notion of how long it took to fill the holes in and bring the runway back into operation?
I have no idea. I can't remember that at all. All I know is that the fighter pilots were absolutely outstanding men of the highest courage. They were wonderful.
Did you see air-to-air combat going on?
Oh, yeah, all the time, yes, yes. And indeed, we had to go and get some of the bodies out of the aircraft and so on and so forth, which was perhaps a bit gruesome, but still had to be done. Mm-hmm. And when the Germans, they were given a proper military funeral.
What impression did you get of them when you first saw them?
The Germans?
Yes.
I suppose I was brought up to dislike Germans, but I didn't know at all. One regarded them as human beings, and they were doing what they had to do, and we were doing what we had to do.
Mm. Did you get hold of any live ones during that time?
Not anyone who had then were dead ones.
Not much change to be got out of them, really.
Not much. I do remember saying one day, there's the best type of German, and pointing to the body there, which perhaps was very unchristian.
How was it that you went to Sandhurst? Was there a selection process?
Yes, well, I was told by the Coldstream. Yes. When you go to this young soldier's plane, make it quite certain to your commanding officer that you are a candidate for the Coldstream and you're going to go to Sandhurst, which I did. And they had this all in their minds. We had a very pleasant commanding officer. He had one arm blown off in the First War. A fellow called Wilson, obviously known as Tug. But very pleasant man indeed, and he gave us every encouragement. And it came to March 1941, and the regimental headquarters of the Coldstream made it quite clear to me that I was going to Sandhurst that month. So we were given warrants, put onto a train, the three of us, Norton Braven, Tim Lewis and myself, and arrived here.
So you then became an officer cadet?
An officer cadet, yes. Mm. With a white band round our fore and afts. Yes. And I've got the photographs in my house now.
But there was no sort of formal examination or board or anything of that sort before you went to Sandhurst?
No, because we were told that as we'd been interviewed at regimental quarters, and they were prepared to put us in. In fact, in regimental quarters, well, in fact, I still work in my regimental quarters in Coldstream today, now, at this time. I looked in my own file, and I saw that at the age of, I think, 17, I saw the words written down, a good cadet, a good candidate. I'm blowing my own trumpet now.
This man, Tug, did you know anything about what he'd done during
nothing
the First World War?
Absolutely nothing at all, no. We saw him very rarely indeed.
What sort of age was he?
I suppose he'd been about 50. Must have been.
He's rather old for a battalion commander.
Well, young soldiers, do you see? Yes,
but you were in the front line all the same.
But people didn't. This is ridiculous. How on earth could we be in the front line as totally untrained young soldiers?
Well, if you have nothing else.
That's where we were. Mm. I mean, going back in the Allenbrook Diaries, which I'm reading now, and when he was the commander chief of Home Forces, he was appalled at the state of the Home Forces.
Well, in June 1940. We had two properly trained battalions for the defence of the whole of Greater London.
That's right.
And that was it.
That was so it.
Doing what you can with what you've got.
That's right.
What happened to you then when you arrived at Sandhurst? Where were you accommodated?
In what we call C Company, which is up the top here now.
In New Building.
In New Building, yes. Mm. And all the New Building were the infantry, and over in the old building it was the armoured corps. Mm. Poor people going to the Guards Armour Division, like, for example, David Scott Barrett, he went over there. That's where our sort of paths divided.
Did you say anything of each other?
I was here before him. I'm six months older than him. So we only didn't see each other very much then, no.
What was on the syllabus of training at Sandhurst then when you were here? What did you learn?
Our chief instructor was a man called Harry Harcourt Vernon of the Grenadiers, and we got a DSO and MC from the First War.
Do you know, I really can't remember. It was all very basic stuff. Very basic. We had the adjutant's parade practically every morning up in the old square.
Henry Clues of the Scots Guards was the adjutant. And we marched down from the new buildings or the old buildings very regularly, indeed, about 7 in the morning. Or we did drill under Sergeant Lord and our platoon staff sergeants.
Was that the first parade?
Yeah, there was the first parade.
Muster parade.
Yeah, that sort of thing, yes. Mm. We were given, I think they called it gunfire before, that tea and so on. So
tea with
biscuits. Mm. And then we went to have breakfast after that. Then I think our first, we did a lot of work in the halls of study.
Do you remember what subjects you were studying in the classrooms, halls of study?
Do you know, I can find very little to say about that, Nigel. What were we studying? We did a certain amount of military history, did a lot of map reading. We did, obviously, sand table exercises. We were given a lecture one day by our company commander, this delightful man called Victor Blundell, Hollinshead Blundell, the Scots Guards. And he said, I'm going to lecture you now on aid to the civil power. And then he paused and said, whatever you do on these occasions, if you're ever confronted with an occasion like that, don't do as General Dyer did.
I can remember it distinctly.
Did he explain why you shouldn't?
Well, I think so. He probably went on to it, yes.
When you were doing your sand table exercises, can you remember what sort of scale of tactics you were being taught?
We were not taught battalion tactics at all. It was purely up to company tactics. Okay. And the battalion, the company is part of the battalion. You get your orders from the battalion commander, etc.
So would it be company as within a battalion context?
Yes, within a battalion context, yes. Mm. Yes.
When they were doing that sort of thing, were they giving you decisions to make and appointments?
Oh, yes. And in fact, we were split up into groups. And X was made the platoon commander for that day.
Yes.
Y and Z were section commanders and so on. Mm. And this was leadership, which was coming up. They were very keen on leadership indeed. Mm. I mean, we really lived up to this business. The motto of Santa, serve to lead. Mm. And we were all put in charge at some time during the course of a week, or of a month, I should say, as an NCO. I mean, and it was a great period. I can remember saying, well, myself, I think I was made a sergeant on one occasion, marching in the supernumerary rank, which I felt very proud of myself.
When you'd done your theoretical work, as in map reading and so forth, was that followed up by practice
in
the field?
Yes, we did a lot of training up in Olean, which of course now is a housing estate. But that was all our areas for exercising, and the Halford Bridge Flats towards Hartley Whitney. And, oh yes, we did a lot of motor transport work as well. And we were taught to ride motorbikes, which was an absolute hoot. We all were out in crock on motorbikes, and imagine all the 18-year-olds behaving dreadfully badly.
What about going out overnight? Did you have continuous runs of days out on the exercise training ground?
We did a certain amount of night training.
You did?
Yes, yes. Mm. How much, I honestly don't know. I can't remember.
Do you remember what sort of things you were doing at night? Was it formal attacks, or was it mainly patrolling and...
It was patrolling and defence positions, mainly. Oh. And, yes, we always used to end up with an attack. Mm. Sectional platoon attack.
Was this training purely infantry, or did you ever have any consideration of
purely
artillery
infantry.
Or air support?
Purely armor? Infantry. I suppose we must have been told we were going to have some support, but I can't remember that at all. Mm. But it was mainly infantry.
Yes.
We were on the infantry side, we were getting into the infantry. It was rather blinkered training.
Mm. Do you remember if there was ever any sort of attempt to put together a joint effort with the armoured Octu people in our building?
No, never did that at all, no. Never. Mm. We never saw them.
You never saw them?
No. Mm.
What was your working day like when you said you started at 0700 in the morning with drill, and
yes.
then you had breakfast,
yes.
and then you'd have your halls of study.
Halls of study.
Yeah.
You always normally had a parade in the afternoon as well. Mm. We did a lot of PT. We were immensely fit. Mm. We did PT. I think we did PT nearly every day. And we had a most marvellous PT staff here. I've lost many a pound in that gym over there, I can tell you.
What was the emphasis on in the PT? Because you can do your physical training for endurance or for strength or for agility. Do you remember if there was an emphasis on one or other those factors?
Not one. Those all these factors were combined, but we didn't concentrate on any one particular one. I mean, a great deal was to do with strength, a lot of rope climbing,
yes.
And that incredible exercise where, I don't know if they still have them there now, the wall bars, whereby you hung on the wall bars with your hands above your head, and then you had to bring your feet up into the sitting position.
Yes.
Which is quite a strenuous exercise.
Yeah.
Try it.
And was it mainly exercises under supervision and circuit training, or did you have games as well as part of the physical training?
I fenced. I fenced at Westminster for school. Mm. I did some fencing here, yes. We didn't have any milling contests. I don't remember. We must put on the gloves sometime or other, I suppose. But we didn't have any milling contests as we had when I went to the parachute regiment. Mm.
What was your weapon with the fencing?
I fenced with the foil and sabre.
Was that really an extracurricular activity, or was it part of the service?
No, it was an extracurricular activity, same as it was at school.
Yeah. When would your working day normally come to a close?
I suppose somewhere in the neighbourhood of about 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Mm. But then, of course, we had evening work to do as well. And, of course, we had to do a lot of getting our kit prepared for the following day, too.
So you had homework to do and cleaning, and preparing.
And then, because we always had sort of dinner in the evening in the mess hall.
What was the food like here at that time? Was it better than in the regiment?
Oh, marvellous, yes. I can't tell you. There was no comparison at all with the food here and the food at with the young soldiers. We were well fed.
Did they have any formal entertainments here, dinner nights and guest nights?
Yes, we had dinner nights, yes. I remember one night, sitting at a dinner night, sitting opposite, as he was then, Captain Fitzalan Hard, now General Lord Michael Fitzalan Hard. and so, yes, I mean, we had people there, yes. I suppose it must have been, we would not have had more, I wouldn't have thought, during my 4 months that I was here, 6 months that I was here. I should have had more than about six, about one a month, and like that.
Was there any time set aside for recreation, or did you just have to take it as and when you had a chance?
Well, yes, when we had, there were set aside for recreation, yes. Mm. I think we had rugger and soccer, I think we had, yes. But it was all pretty mild, you know. Mm. We didn't have any star turns.
Were you allowed out?
Yes, at the weekends. Mm. But if you were a naughty boy, as I was on two occasions, and got punished, and confined to barracks, you then had to do a drill on a Wednesday afternoon, Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon, and I mean drill, at the rate of knots on the old college square. You reported and you were with the halters and away you went.
What had you done in order to attract such terrible punishment?
On one occasion, I had failed to swing my arm correctly in the supernumerary rank, coming back from old college to new college, and so I was given 4 extra drills only for being idle on parade. But then, worse still, it was a blackout time, and we had cadets on sentry duty and so on. And I put my light on. I failed to draw my curtain. And so the sentry shouted out, "Put that light out." Whereupon I went to the window, and for better words, I told him to go away.
Ah.
These weren't my exact words, but that's what I meant.
It was in military language.
In military language. And so anyway, he reported me, and the following morning I was sent for on company orders. And Major Blundell said to me, "Corbould, what did you do?" I said, "I told him to go away, sir." He said, "Did you tell him to go away politely or impolitely?" "Impolitely, sir. 7 days to barracks."
Was the discipline here tighter than it had been in the Young Soldiers Battalion?
Oh, much tighter, yes. And one accepted it. I mean, as I said to you before, I was used to discipline from the cradle.
Did everyone manage to accept it, or were you...
I didn't hear anybody moan about it at all, no. And sometimes it was treated rather a joke, but it's all done. No one moaned.
How were you assessed?